Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Bulls, your daily podcast on the Chicago Bulls. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Make sure you leave us a 5-star review. You can also find us on Stitcher, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. You can email us with any advertising inquiries or basketball questions at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @LockedOnBulls. Like us on Facebook @LockedOnBulls. We're presented today by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the free SeatGeek app and use the promo code LOBULLS to get $20 back when you make your first purchase. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score, and we've got a special guest live in studio. Visiting this week from Chicago, Sirit Sohi from ESPN, Vice, SB Nation. Is there anywhere you don't write? Where? I think at this point it'd be easy. Let's just list some places you don't write.
Okay, well, we'll go with all the best publications. So I haven't done anything for The New Yorker.
That's
or
true.
The Atlantic. Or, you know, anywhere that people get... The very important information.
I like that you worked The Athletic in there on
par with... The Atlantic. Oh, I have written for The Athletic.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right, the Atlantic. So you're in town. We can't really talk about what you're working on, but it's something Bulls related. But just kind of having been, you know, now you've been around the Bulls for about a week now. You've kind of seen
how weird the Bulls can be on a daily basis. It seems like oh so often.
So what are your like? It's kind of somebody who obviously pays attention to the whole league, but also to the Bulls, but isn't around them kind of on a daily basis the way that we are. Like, what are your thoughts kind of on the team and the roster and like the vibe you're getting from the team?
You know, I keep going back and forth because there's this part of me that kind of wants to drink the Kool-Aid. Especially,
were you hard on them last year?
I was hard on them.
You wrote that that article for, was it The Comeback?
Yeah.
That was, the headline literally was, "The Chicago Bulls are not good."
And that was before they weren't good.
And that was before, that was when they were still, like, in the top five in the East, and they looked like they might make the playoffs, and you just kind of were one of the first people to really say, look, this team is actually not that good, and then, of course, things really went off the rails.
Well, what happened last season is, like, they kept beating pretty bad teams, and their plus-minus rating was one of the... It was really middle of the pack, which I think, you know, if you are a middle of the pack team, whatever, that's fine. But the Bulls were kind of considering themselves contenders, and everybody else thought they were contenders too. So I thought it was kind of a big deal that out of all the other contenders in the league, like, they had the worst plus-minus in comparison to their actual record.
So why are you saying you might be drinking the Kool-Aid this year? Because locally, there's not a lot more hope reinvigorated in this team when... They, you know, have 8 guys on roster turnover, but they got rid of Derrick Rose, one of their best players, and a lot of new faces that are unproven now.
Well, you know, I'm just a natural contrarian. I don't actually believe anything that I say, but if I see something...
Good to know!
Go the opposite
Good
direction.
Good to
know. No, it's really just like, first of all, I think getting rid of Derrick is a plus, especially...
I think
everybody that's been around the Bulls definitely thinks that, and I haven't been around the team as much, but, you know, reading everything from training camp, like, there wasn't a single reporter that was, you know, praising him, and on the other end, it was mostly just like, you know, people on the Bulls just seem to be happy to not have to go into every day thinking, like, what's going on with Rose.
No, that's exactly right, because, I mean, this whole training camp, it's been, you know, like, the last few years, and obviously last year he has the facial fracture 30 minutes into the first practice of training camp. And so we kind of start off last year's camp and the last couple of years going into every practice like, okay, is this going to be the day? Does he have this another injury? Is he going to play in the next game? Or is minutes going to be limited? Just him not being on the team anymore. And I hate to just keep piling on the guy like this, but he just it was just a cloud over the entire team, and that's just gone now. And we can just talk about basketball, and it's great.
Yeah, there's a lot of Derrick Rose fatigue just in years past. The will he or won't he play? And I think we've mentioned this a couple times on the podcast. It's just so hard to game plan when you don't know the availability of someone who's so important to your basketball team, and someone who wasn't always on message and point with Fred Hoiberg. Someone who is much more on message so far early in training camp would be none other than Dwayne Wade, who had quite the media session today after Bulls practice. The Bulls will host the Cavaliers on Friday night at the United Center in their fourth preseason game. That means LeBron James, although he won't be playing for rest reasons, the storyline pops up, his relationship with Dwayne Wade. Fill us in, Sean.
So, it was a pretty interesting, it was definitely the most interesting media availability of training camp so far, because obviously whenever LeBron and Wade are playing in the same game, it's kind of the thing people are talking about, because obviously they played together for 4 years in Miami, and they're one half of the famous Banana Boat squad. They've been friends for a long time. But we kind of asked Wade basically about 2010 free agency, obviously when the three of them, him, LeBron, and Bosch, all went to Miami. But Chicago had been heavily involved in that pursuit and were actually very close to getting at least two of those guys. Wade said that he and LeBron both really wanted to come to Chicago, but that Miami was the only team, once they dumped Michael Beasley, they were the only team that had the cap space to sign all three of them, and that ultimately that was something that they was too good of an opportunity to pass up. And obviously it's hard to argue with what ended up happening, because they made the finals 4 years in a row and they won two titles. But, I mean, one thing I'd say I took issue with, it was a really interesting set of comments today that had a lot of really interesting stuff in it, because he talked a lot about super teams. He talked about, like, the Durant Warriors stuff and just kind of the concept of players deciding where they play. It was cool, but he also completely denied up and down that it was any kind of, the three of them teaming up in 2010 was any kind of premeditated thing that they decided in advance, and I'm just skeptical that that's true.
It's just, you know, just so lucky that all of them, three really good friends, all in their primes, were able to just find a team on which one of the players was already a member, and also just happened to be up for contract negotiations at the same time.
Like, and you're in Miami, which happens to be one of the most appealing cities to play in the league.
You know, I feel like, you know, some people just live charmed lives, I guess.
I guess. But, I mean, that's an important thing to know, which is that the reason that this all was possible is because they all signed their rookie extensions in 2006. And normally the extensions that people sign is, you know, 4 years with the fifth year option. The three of them all signed 3 year deals with a fourth year option instead. So they would become free agents in 2010. And this past winter, there was a great long post on Bleacher Report by Howard Beck that was about the relationship between LeBron and Carmelo, and Carmelo basically said, look, if I had signed the 1 year shorter deal, maybe I could have gotten in on the situation with all of them going to Miami. So I find it a little bit hard to believe that they just did not talk about this, especially with all three of them being close friends. They all signed the same unconventional shorter contracts. They all played on the Olympic team together in 2008. Like, there's too much smoke there for me to think it was not ever anything.
Yeah, what stood out to me was the fact that, I mean, Dwayne Wade was so deep in discussions with the Bulls about actually going to Chicago, and you always wonder how serious was he, and he's maintained every time he was really serious about Chicago. But the Bulls were explaining to him basically the trade routes for Luol Deng, including shipping him off to the Clippers. And they were telling Dwayne Wade all of this. This is what we would have to do. We might be willing to do it to get you, Bron, Bosch in here. And obviously that didn't play out like that. It didn't work out. Miami had an easier route to getting those three guys. And Wade emphasized multiple times that the Bulls only would have been able to get two of them. But I just thought, like, he was, I mean, we talk about him now jokingly, like, when will he start making decisions for the Bulls in season on trades and stuff?
Right.
Like, in 2010, 6 years ago, the front office was sharing plans with him, like, that you would think wouldn't quite go that far. But that's how serious he was. That's how seriously they wanted him. But I feel like Sirak comes on here and says she's drinking the Kool-Aid maybe this year, and then we have the melancholy look back at 2010 of what could have been for the Bulls. Like, that's just the way this organization is, I guess.
So let's talk a little bit more about this year's team, because the Kool-Aid, I actually want to hear what you have to say about this, because I'm like you. I sort of thought that, like, you know, this team could be better than expected, but then these preseason games, they have just not looked good on defense.
I don't know. When I say that I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, I think it's really important to emphasize that, given what the realistic expectations for the team are, what I mean is that, you know, I think that they could really just, like, crawl their way to 41 or 42 wins.
Yes.
Okay. Like, so you're saying not enough sugar in the Kool-Aid.
So the Kool-Aid to you would be like 41, 42 wins and an 8 seed, as opposed to just completely imploding because of the chemistry stuff.
Yeah, it's some diluted Kool-Aid, I would say. It's been sitting out on the porch for a little while. Like, it's kind of tepid now.
Right.
It's not like, you know.
Do you mean to, though, in any regard, that you're buying into a little bit of a culture shift, though, with young guys in a different hope or approach, even if the wins don't manifest themselves on the court in large numbers in year one of this makeover?
Yeah, I think so. Like, a big thing with the team this year is, like, okay, they didn't have great floor spacing last year, and they fell off a defensive cliff last year as well.
Right.
But they also, on the offensive end, they're going to be better this year, despite the fact that they have no spacing. Like, this is a team that is constructed for 2007. But they still have a lot of shot creation, and, like, I do believe that, to an extent, Hoiberg's dribble drive offense could work if these guys buy in, which I think, you know, up until January, I think that's kind of usually how it goes for guys like Rondo, at least. Like, you know, the honeymoon period is always, it's always a little bit, you know, there are hints of success, and, like, you see these highlights, and they're like, okay, you know, like, this could work. It's just that after a while, things do tend to fall off.
You just have to wonder if it's sustainable. So, I don't know. So, this is your first time coming to Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm.
How's it been so far? Love the city?
Yeah, it's amazing.
So, you picked an interesting week to come here because, I mean, obviously, we're kind of in this NBA bubble where we're all just sort of talking about the Bulls and Dwayne Wade and the three alphas and how that's going to work. But they are not by any distance the biggest story in Chicago sports right now. You kind of came right during the peak of the Cubs
Cubs fever. Mania.
Cubs advanced the other day to the NLCS, and that starts on Saturday, and you are going to be out of town. You're going to be here for the Cavs preseason game tomorrow night, but then you're leaving after that. But for anybody listening who wants to go to one of the first two NLCS games, the Cubs, whether they play the Dodgers or the Nationals, I know the way to get the best deal on tickets.
How's that, Sean?
You should go to SeatGeek. It's the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the games you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like being in the stadium for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere with just a few taps, instantly find seats for any game or concert that I want to see. You always get the best deal on every ticket because the SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites, so you always know you're going to get the best tickets available. And they want to help you get the most bang for your buck, which is why SeatGeek also grades every ticket on a value scale of 1 through 100, with 1 being the worst, 100 being the best, so you know when you're going to get underpriced seats in your section or overpriced seats, so you always know when you're getting the best deal. Best of all, listeners to Locked On Bulls can get a $20 rebate back on their first purchase. All you have to do is download the free SeatGeek app on your phone, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code LOBULLS, L-O-B-U-L-L-S, and then after you make your first purchase on SeatGeek, whether it's a sporting event, a concert, a play, whatever else, they will send you back $20 after you make your first purchase. SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to get tickets for any game that you want to go to.
Now, Sierra, you mentioned Rondo. It's a big storyline for the Bulls. You mentioned Derrick Rose being gone. It's helpful for them, probably. Rondo, Hoiberg, both very intelligent basketball minds. Didn't always work for Fred in year one. Rondo's had some pushback, obviously, with coaches in his past stops. Are you buying that they can make this partnership work all year? Are you buying that they can go through a year and have, I mean, you got to be critical of each other at times, but can they go and be on the same page without blowing up and having this all fall apart?
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that. Like I said, like, I think this thing is going to be pretty smooth sailing up until January, and that's when it starts getting real about, you know, who these guys really are going to be on these teams. So I think the thing that really helps them early on is that Hoiberg is kind of passive.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a coach in the NBA that would cede control without it being, like, you know, a Popovich thing.
Right.
Where it's like, you know, I'm because I'm so confident in myself, I concede control. It's Hoiberg, really, right? Like this is
something that we've talked about basically since the Rondo signing happened. The reason that he clashed with Rick Carlisle in Dallas is because Rick Carlisle is somebody who really likes to micromanage. And again, Rick Carlisle is one of the best coaches in the league, so I'm not saying that as a negative thing. But Rondo's a guy that likes to really control what offense is being run and what people are doing out on the court. And Rick Carlisle is also somebody that likes to do that. With Rondo, if he has a player like Rondo, Fred Hoiberg is perfectly happy, at least to the extent that I know him, to just sit back and be like, okay, you can go ahead and decide what plays we run.
Right. The Rondo-Carlisle pairing, that was so clearly a match made in hell.
Yeah.
But when you look at everybody on this team this year, they all have separate motivations for making it work. Rondo's is very obvious. He, like, really, really badly needs a PR shakeup.
Right.
He's, like, the Dallas situation was awful for him. He left Boston saying that he didn't play any defense.
He had the one-year deal in Sacramento, and that team wasn't very good.
Yeah, and I think he also terminated a lot of the goodwill that he even had in Boston, which was quite a great deal when, you know.
Yeah, he was on the OA title team. Mm-hmm. He was beloved there.
So, like, he obviously has his motivations for having a year where he really makes it work. Jimmy Butler is always constantly motivated, and you don't really need a reason for it. Like, it's just, like, that's every single year. Like, he always just comes back a little bit better. And I think, especially after last year with everything that happened with Rose and Noah, he's going to be motivated to make things work and just, like, not get the reputation as a guy that can't play with other stars and gets chippy and whatnot. Wade is probably, this is not, like, this plays on a smaller scale, but Wade is probably a little bit pissed off at Riley and kind of wants to stick it to him. Like, that's not as big of a motivation as the other two have. But the big thing is also that Taj is in a contract year. Mm-hmm. He spent the summer working out with Jimmy. I think he's going to have a really, really big year. So there's a couple guys on the team that really have, like, they have individual motivations to come together collectively. So I think that's a big reason that when things do come to a head, maybe they'll go and make it work.
No, if it's going to work, the Bulls have to get a lot better at offense. I mean, that's kind of Hoiberg's calling card when they hired him. The space and pace system that didn't work out nearly as well as they wanted last year, kind of with a middling offense, obviously. And this year, new faces. Like, how's this offense supposed to work? Do you think it's going to work? And if it does, what's it going to look like?
Are you buying the idea that Dwayne Wade is now a knockdown three-point shooter because he's 5-for-8 in the preseason? He's 5-for-8 in the preseason.
I don't think I saw him miss a single three during the playoffs, too. So
that's the thing. He shot like 55% during the playoffs last year, and now he's shot 5-for-8 in the preseason. So what is that, like a 20-game streak of him being a good three-point shooter? I mean,
recency bias. We're into that now.
Recency bias, yeah.
Well, I think ideally what it would look like is the defense is awful because all they do is gamble.
Right.
And they get out into the floor and they run in transition. It's going to be a younger team than they've had for a while. I don't think Butler's ever really had anybody to run with. And for that matter, neither is Taj. Like, the funny thing with when you would watch the early Bulls is, like, I actually don't think that anybody ever threw an alley-oop to Taj until, like, Ronnie Brewer.
When
he started getting played, like, way late into that, like, into Rose's MVP year. Because Rose never, like, Rose was honestly faster than everybody. If he had the ball, he was just going to go up. The big man was never going to get fed there.
Well, when you have, like, such a big team with Mookie, that was, like, when Noah and Ashiq were there. And, like, I think Kurt Thomas was still on that team. Like, you got these big, slow, big guys and not really a lot of, you know, spacing going on there. Like, that's just the kind of team that was common then. This team is a little bit different.
I've just discovered a really concerning matter for the Bulls, too. Like, what's their bread and butter play going to be if they don't have the Pau Gasol to Jimmy Butler lob play for a dunk, or in the case where they beat the Pacers one game, like, he threw it in from a weird angle for a layup? Like, they ran that play at least once, sometimes twice a game for some easy buckets. I don't know what their bread and butter play is now.
It's obviously just going to be a floppy set for Jimmy Butler to get
off. You know, just off the sides of the hoop. Isn't that what the Clippers made famous with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin? But I feel like that personnel might be a little bit more suited.
Just a little bit. So who's going to be, with Rondo and Butler or Paul Zipser and Butler?
If Paul Zipser's getting that many minutes and is it the centerpiece of the Bulls' go-to play, the season's really gone off the tracks, I feel like.
I would say so.
Any Bulls players you expect big improvement this season, or anyone stand out in your early preseason watching, your reading, your prognosticating? You hit the Bulls on the head last year when everyone was still optimistic, saying they were going to go downhill, and they did. So clearly, you're one for one in telling us what's going to happen with the Bulls in the Fred Hoiberg era.
Well, first of all, I'll say I'm not one for one. You guys just remember the one.
It's like the opposite of normally with predictions. Right. Like, the reason I don't like to ever make predictions is because people are always going to remember the ones that you get wrong, and then the ones you get right, they'll never give you credit for. But I think that article that you wrote last year was so, like, I think a lot of, like, smart Bulls fans kind of read that and went, yeah, that makes sense. But, you know, just a lot of the local media saw that and were just like, wait, what is this? They have one of the best records in the East. And then It ended up being right. I think that's why that kind of stands out in memory.
Yeah, that was one of those articles where I definitely felt a lot of pushback. And then as the season went on, it would kind of get, like, brought back
people
up to the surface.
Everybody was just like, oh, look at this article that called this 2 months ago.
Yeah, so I think if anybody's up for improvement, I think number one on the list is probably going to have to be Doug McDermott. He's going into that third year. That's usually when most players, if they're going to make the jump, do.
Right.
He's one of those other guys that spent the offseason working out with Jimmy. And I think, like, that's becoming a kind of a mythologized thing.
Right. They had the beach workouts in Cancun with and Doug not wearing the socks like we told us.
Yeah, they get kicked off the beach at one spot, go to a different one, so they don't have free reign everywhere once they leave the country, I guess, for workouts. But I think if Doug McDermott's going to make the leap, he has to do more off the bounce, probably, a little bit more creating for others and himself, because we know he can knock down open three-point shots. We know he can dunk when he has a clear lane and a head of steam and a good pass.
Yeah, I think for him it's going to be a matter of volume. I think the Bulls obviously are going to need floor spacing, so he's obviously going to, his number is going to be called a lot. And from that, you know, I think when you see young players, especially in Doug's position, shooters especially, like when they start to get the ball a little bit more, they get a little bit more confident with it, do take it into the lane a little bit more, they get their touches and whatnot. And then from there, it's kind of where everything grows. Like once you see yourself do something, you feel like, okay, yeah, this is something I can continuously keep doing. So I think that's like the kind of, if he does have a growth season, that's kind of going to be the way that it happens.
Now, you said, you brought up pushback when you wrote that article. The other day, we got a kick out of, I tweeted that Wade was encouraging Rondo and Butler to shoot three-pointers, and they were encouraging each other. And, like, when we're in the bubble, the Bulls bubble every day, and we're only in the city, like, it's a little different, I think, because, like, I got no pushback off that.
Right.
When I write that there's concerns about this Bulls team, there's no pushback. Like, the only pushback comes at this point after last year. Like, it was probably 50-50 split over the firing of Tom Thibodeau. Like, people saying, no, you just kicked the best coach or one of the best coaches in the NBA to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
And others saying, well, you know,
he ran guys into the ground.
It's time for change. And then bad season, everyone now says it's a wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
Outside the bubble, like, what's the view on the Bulls? Like, what's the common NBA fan's view on this?
I think the view, it goes two ways, because for the casual NBA fan, you hear that Rondo, Wade, and Butler are on the same team, and you're kind of thinking, oh, this will be good. Like, this will kind of be like
a super team.
Not necessarily, but like an 08 Celtics type of feel.
Right.
Like, obviously not as good. They're, you know, the 08 Celtics were considered the favorite, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, like, casual fans in that sense are like, oh, yeah, they got a bunch of good guys, a bunch of competitors, and they're like, so they're thinking, like, oh, they're going to be better. Like, oh, finally they surrounded Butler with some guys, like, got Rose out of there and whatnot. So I think it's kind of like, the team I compare them to, which is interesting because they traded with them this offseason, is the Knicks, and that, like, I think the casual fan really, really overrates them. But I do think, like,
They've got names.
The outside the bubble of that city, NBA media might underrate them just as a gut reaction to getting names.
So do you think the Knicks are underrated? Because I think the Knicks are going to be a disaster.
I think the Knicks are underrated from a media perspective for sure, because I think it's kind of like, it's natural to react and kind of decide that you're going to beat up on the Knicks, especially when they make a short-sighted move like signing Noah. And you know, with everything going on with Rose, I think, you know, it's fair to criticize him, of course, but on the court, you know, I think he's probably going to be fine. Like, he didn't really deal with a major injury except for the facial fracture, which is total, like, that's just dumb luck, right?
So, I think Derek will be fine. I'm a lot more worried about Joe.
But that's the thing, though. Okay, so Joe gets hurt, and then all of a sudden they're playing the way they were supposed to in the first place with Kristaps at the five, right? Like, I think they're kind of, the way that I see the Knicks is I feel like they're going to fail upwards.
That's actually a good point. I hadn't thought about
that. It feels like they're going to be battling the Bulls for one of those 7 or 8 seeds.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
I feel like many of these teams are battling for the 7 or 8 seeds.
Well,
it's very, very
well, it's like, well, because, I mean, it's a kind of a crowded group because it's those two teams, and then it's like Washington is in there. Mm-hmm. I thought Milwaukee was in there until the Middleton injury happened. That kind of kills their season. But, you know, Orlando could get in there. Like, there's so many. It's going to be interesting. My thing with this Knicks team versus this Bulls team is, like, and I maybe this doesn't matter as much as I think it does, but, like, the one thing about this Bulls training camp, as much as we have some questions about whether it really fits together on the court or how that's going to work, there hasn't been any drama as of yet in terms of, like, guys not getting along or guys having disagreements about stuff or people not being on the same page. The Knicks camp between, like, different guys reacting differently to the triangle and, like, not knowing what position Porzingis is going to play, and then obviously all the stuff that's going on with Derek, which we should probably not even get to, but, like, all that stuff, like, it's just nonstop, you know, off-the-court stuff with the Knicks, like, already in training camp, and I just don't know how much that's going to set aside once the season starts.
I think in New York, though, like, things naturally blow up. Like, for example, what Spencer did when he said about Jimmy and how, like, he said that Jimmy's legend grows in his head every day.
Right.
That's funny, and I think in a sense...
And,
like,
he was clearly
people,
just joking.
Right. He's joking, but at the same time, like, that's something that I think with everything that was said about Jimmy last year, like, reports saying that, like, certain teammates thought he went Hollywood, which was so clearly joking, Noah, because he used a Hollywood term before.
With the Miami, like, right, I remember that.
Right, like, that was, like, the most obvious anonymous quote of all time. But, you know, like, you see something like that, I think... In a market like New York, that blows up and it becomes an issue. So I think, like, as much as Chicago is a big market, there are things that are kind of priced in where it's not going to, like, certain things are going to just not be an issue, whereas, like, everything is an issue in New York.
Yeah, I want to give a little context on that quote from Dinwiddie. It was Simone Biles visited the Bulls at practice on Wednesday, and not much going on by way of Bulls news, but Dinwiddie was quoted as saying, asked who was a better Olympian, Jimmy Butler, won gold medal with Team USA, or Biles, who won, I think, 4 gold medals. And he said, "Jimmy, y'all know him. His legend grows in his mind by the second. So no chance I would ever say Jimmy's a better Olympian than Simone." Which I just find hysterical. Because Jimmy was weird the other night in the locker room after the preseason game when Isaiah Cannon was in there talking about his legendary plus 40 rating in an exhibition win against the Pacers. And Jimmy was like... It's like Cannon's first time he's talking to the media, and Jimmy was, like, across the room, like, yelling, say my name, put my name in the interview, you haven't said it yet. And, like, Cannon was just like,
what
like,
is this?
He's like, he wanted to have, like, a 90-second interview, give us his quotes, and go have dinner on his Saturday night, you know?
Well, because, like,
Jimmy's over here yelling.
I don't think Isaiah Cannon has ever had, like, the entire throng of media around him, because he, you know, he was a bench player in Houston, never really did much, and then he was on that terrible Sixers team last couple of years, so...
Yeah, so Jimmy's just a goofball, basically,
right,
all the time. So Spencer Dinwiddie isn't afraid to call out him for being a goofball and the legend growing in his mind every day. Definitely kind of cracked me up, no doubt.
Absolutely. So you're here, what, one more day?
Yeah, I'll be at the game tomorrow, and then I'm heading out.
Cool. So We can find your work. Give us some places to plug. I know it's a long list, but
we have unlimited podcast time.
Well, most recently I've been doing some stuff for The Comeback. It's thecomeback.com.
Mm-hmm.
Great site. You guys should all check it out.
Some good stuff on there.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for the most part right now. I've got some stuff coming out, and
At various outlets people have heard of.
Yeah, pretty much. I do some stuff at Vice, Sports on Earth.
You have one of the best Twitter handles.
Right, I'm at Damian Trillard.
Damian Trillard. And you have not changed it. I've known you for like 4 years and you've kept the... I mean, you corrected the spelling like several years ago because there used to be like an extra I in there.
Yeah.
But you've kept like now as you're, you know, become more, you know, your notoriety has gone up a little bit, you kind of haven't like tried to make your handle more professional. And I respect it.
I gotta keep it Trillard.
Absolutely. So,
as always, you can find us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Find us on email. Email us with advertising inquiries to lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Any basketball-related questions, Two, find Sean on Twitter at Hyken, myself at Cody Westerlund. And most of all, subscribe to us. Find us on iTunes.
iTunes, make sure you leave us a 5-star review. You can also find us on Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play. Thanks again to SeatGeek for sponsoring today's episode. Remember, download the free SeatGeek app. Use the promo code LOBULLS, and you will get $20 back when you make your first purchase. Subscribe to The Athletic to read my work covering the Bulls. Check out 670thescore.com to read Cody's work, and we will be back with you next week.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.